Dave, this is Joe, and you knew I had to call in when you brought up Steel Dawn. Well, maybe you didn't know that. I don't know how you would have known that. But anyway, man, Steel Dawn rules. I love both of Swayze's Dawn movies, Steel and Red. They're amazing. Steel Dawn inspired OSE game is going to be fantastic, man. I am way jealous of those dudes that get to sit around the table and play with you at Dreaming Spires, dude. That's going to be awesome. Kick ass, man. You're going to kill it out there. It's going to be fantastic. I wish you the best of luck, and I will talk to you again. Peace out.
Hey Dave, Jason here, Nerds RPG Variety Cast. Sorry I missed your game the other day. Life's just gotten real busy. Anyhow, real quick, you're using Steel Dawn at OSE. That's very interesting, and I fully approve. I look forward to your results. You know, at Shandy Andy's prompting, Cody M on the Audio Dungeon Discord created a game channel that's called The Days of High Adventure. A little bit of input there from Hobbs, of course. But, you know, with kind of interconnected games where you can move characters back and forth. And, you know, the idea was to maybe use OSE. I mean, the idea was to use different game systems. But the talk was about maybe standardizing OSE. And I actually was thinking about doing something very similar to what you're talking about, doing an OSE game, but or OSE rules with, you know, more modern settings. So great minds think alike.
Child out of the cold and listen how the story's told. From fairy tales to happenstance, the dice rule every random chance. Take off your coat and stay a while, we're rolling that deep percentile.
Hi everyone, it's Dave. A little bit croaky this morning, perhaps because I ran more than 7 hours of gaming yesterday at Tales from Dreaming Spires, which is what I'm going to talk about. I had a great time. You have, of course, just heard TJ Drennan's Deep Percentile theme tune, and at the top of the show there you heard from Joe Richter of Hindsight Listen Wheel or Woe, and Jason of Nerds RPG Variety Cast. Thank you very much for the call-ins and for the good wishes about Steel Dawn, which is what I ran yesterday. Yeah, I'm on a high about it. It went pretty well. Joe, I'm going to admit, I don't know how, but I've never seen Red Dawn. I'll look it up. I do. I'm a bit of an early Swayze fan, obviously Roadhouse, but Next of Kin is also a winner for me, with a good performance by Liam Neeson as well, if I recall correctly. But so yesterday I ran my Steel Dawn game at Tales from Dreaming Spires, and I must firstly say, it made me so happy. It made me so happy to live in Oxford. Maybe so happy to have found that community. You'll remember many, many episodes ago I talked about hooking up with a local Oxford community. I didn't manage to get a face-to-face game running out of it, but I did make some pretty good connections, particularly with Stephen Dowling, who put this all together, and he just did a great job. Made a bit of money for charity. Put together a day. Over the last few months, managed to get, I think, at last count, just over 70 registrations to it, which is not bad for a sort of laid back local con in a community centre. It was up there with Owlbear. So just absolutely well done to Stephen, and thank you for getting me involved and inviting me to run a game. And I think the plan in October is to do a Tales from Screaming Spires, which I am well up for, and as soon as I know more about that, I will be pushing it hard. You can see I'm feeling I'm feeling warm vibes towards humankind because I've had a day at a con. I'm glad I do these things. I haven't got a face-to-face game going because of Anchor. I've got loads of online play going. That's great. But you can't beat it, can you? I've done a whole day's gaming. I've gamed with 8 new people. I love it. And the Steel Dawn thing went well. So I ran Old School Essentials. So I'd never run Old School Essentials before. So I've got a feel for that. You know how it goes. I've spent a lot of time with those beautiful rule books, but now I've run it for sort of 7.5 hours or so. I can go back to the rule books and just clarify all the things that I kind of winged in play. You never know quite which bits you understand and which bits you don't. But I was very pleased that it was, really light to run. A lot of the players hadn't played any kind of D&D at all before. So it was great, giving what I think was a pretty good example of old school play. I had a bit of a wobble ahead of time and thought that it was going to be pretty fatal with level 1 characters. And just printed out a whole bunch more pre-gens and gave everybody 2 characters at the start and thought I'd treat it a bit like a funnel. And that was great because that meant I could emphasise the unforgiving nature of OSR. So pretty much in the 2 sessions, pretty much everybody lost 1 character. Only 1 person lost both of their characters. And even then it was sort of way on into the session and he had good fun. I let him sort of interject for some cut scenes or ghost flashbacks, whatever you want to call them. And I think he enjoyed that, particularly at the end of the second session. I'll say more about where they went, but I'd managed to set up a really difficult difficult sort of moral quandary for them. And they spent a good 10 minutes talking about what they were going to do at the end. And he was able to take part in that. And I was pretty pleased. He was able to talk about this sort of the hope that his characters had died for and it represented the players wrestling with this dilemma. It was really good. It was really good fun. Yeah, so Old School Essentials ran absolutely fine. So I'm happy about that. I kind of still think maybe if I was going to introduce old school play, it might be white box where I'm going to go now. It might be white box that I start waving around at cons as an example of old school play. But definitely, if I develop this Steel Dawn thing up for publication, I'm thinking it's an obvious contender for the next zine. Obviously, with the serial numbers filed off, then it would work perfectly for Old School Essentials. I really did run Old School Essentials out of the box. All I had to do was rename the wizard class as a keeper of arcane secrets, and I suggested that the priest powers were psionic powers, but really it's made to be kind of left as is and flavoured how you want, and that was the idea of the Steel Dawn inspired game, and that went very well. I was really proud in the event. It took me quite a long time, but I was really proud of the various random tables I come up with because I'd given them pre-gens. I did a random table for treasured items, which were various kind of, bits of 1980s technology or other things that they might have that just gave them a little bit. Some of them were just bits of kit. Some of them had little quirks that they could start off with. And then their distinguishing features was basically a whole D20 table of 1980s fashion choices. And that played out how I want. It really gave a feel to the setting. I found myself saying, it's just old school D&D, but with more 80s hair. That's how I sold it to people. And it was great. You had that mixture when people were rolling sort of jet black backcombed hair. They were like, yes, of course, jet black backcombed hair. And then other people were rolling hot pants. And just people were loving that and laughing. And there were a couple of mutations in there and stuff. And I was really pleased with how that went. I think I managed to capture the genre feel that I was going for. And then what I did to actually run the game, I suppose I messed up a little bit. I intended it as a part 1 and a part 2 because I had a morning game and an evening game. And I even thought as I did it, this is a bit experimental, But I thought they were both discrete. But I thought it meant if people signed up for both, they could take their character from part one into part two. In effect, in the evening, I didn't have people from the morning game for various reasons. I had sort of three in the morning, then I had five different people in the evening. And so what I did in the evening, I actually took them back to part one. And then, because in the morning, I'd sort of, because I'd intended for part two to be the sequel in the evening, I couldn't move on to part two. But part one finished quite quickly, not desperately quickly, but it finished quickly enough that if I'd been thinking about things differently, I could have just moved into part two and perhaps rushed them through that dungeon. Then it would have been a really satisfying experience. So that's what I did in the evening when I got a sense that part one could go reasonably quickly, and obviously I can wing my dungeons, add rooms in, take rooms out. I thought I can get them through the whole experience, and I did. I managed that, and they had a really good arc, and I felt really good. I was buzzing when I came out of that, and I think the players enjoyed it. So what I did in the morning was all credit to Goblin's Henchmen. Thank you so much for the innovation of the Hex Flower. Can't go on enough about it, but you can get hold on DriveThruRPG. I think it's free or pay what you want. You can get hold of Goblin's Henchmen's Carapace game, which is a Hex Flower generated dungeon crawl. It's a dungeon crawl with a difference. You're going through these ant caverns, and because they're unnavigable by the human mind, instead of having a map, you've got this Hex Flower generator. And I just took that for the desert crawl. So the idea was that they had to get to the Temple of the Worm to find this ancient entity or artifact they didn't really know, known as the Sky Slave. In fact, it was all communicated to them through legends, so they didn't even know if the Temple of the Worm existed or the Sky Slave existed. But to navigate through the desert, it was just the Hex Flower from Carapace and all the mechanics with the serial numbers filed off. I made my own tables, so instead of ant cavern encounters, there were post-apocalyptic desert encounters. And then the other suggestion Goblin's Henchman makes is, as you go through, he had some quite complex environment and room generator tables, and he said you hand that over to the players and they can roll on those. So I did a version of that, just d20 rolls where they rolled each time they did the movement cycle. One of the players rolled for terrain, ancient remnants and desert weather, and then described what happened, and that was great. So I'm perhaps running a hex crawl in the Black Hat game this evening. I haven't exactly decided what direction that's going to go in, but if I get time, I'm going to absolutely do that for the Black Hat game and just send it over to one of the players to roll on and explain, because it's a great innovation and it works really well. So thanks to Goblin's Henchmen for that. I mean, the last thing I want to say about that is I'd planned to do another table where I generated the character's hopes, but I didn't get time. I think I had enough. So instead, I said to the players, you know, what binds, because I'd given them two characters each, I was like, what binds these two characters together is their hope. And it's, this game is not about keeping your characters alive, it's about keeping hope alive. And I really laid that on thick. And particularly in the second game, that really sort of paid off at the end. And they talked about, you know, but what which of these decisions, I just gave them a whole bunch of non-optimal options, and they had to choose between them. And they were doing that. They were like, oh, but which option will keep hope alive? And it actually became a really distinctive feature of the game. And so I'm thinking, definitely, when I put this out in whatever form, it will be a game about keeping hope alive in a blasted post-apocalyptic wasteland. And for a time, as I'm thinking about it, I was thinking, oh, maybe there's just a system here. Maybe there's room for a system where, instead of particularly worrying about your characters, maybe you can have a whole sort of roster of characters, but what you are playing is the hope, and you're playing to discover whether, you know, how long you can keep hope alive before it succumbs to secret fears. So mechanically, your important mechanics would be your hope versus your fear. And you'd play for a roster of different characters, and that would mean sometimes characters would die heroically. And they would actually sacrifice themselves on behalf of hope. So actually your hope stack could be strengthened by a heroic death. I was thinking about that. Maybe there's a mechanic there. But on the other hand, it worked so well as an old school essentials game that maybe that's for another day. But I've been thinking about that. It's really nice. I've come out of it sort of full of creative thoughts. And I'm wondering if I put it out for Old School Essentials, whether I would maybe overlay just like a half page hope mechanic. I didn't have a mechanic for this game. I just had that emphasis, or whether that emphasis is enough, because it really paid off. And I think it's to do with the way, you know, the revelations about what Sky Slave was gave them this difficult choice. But there we go. That's my report of Tales from Dream Inspires. I'm really buzzing. Yeah, happy today to be gaming. The morning is bright. I'm happy that I'm in Oxford. I couldn't resist two further thoughts on the mechanics of hope. And yes, I did say mechanics. The first one is, if I was doing this for Old School Essentials, one thing I could do, and I would say this is an old indie RPG trick of rewarding players for doing exactly what you want the game to do, which actually you can encounter in Numenera, which very simply just gives XP for discovery, because it's a discovery-based game. I call that an indie trick, yes. Numenera is not a game produced by an independent producer. But nevertheless, I would call this an indie element. And if people are interested, I plan to say more in a couple of episodes' time about why I sometimes use the expression indie to do with gaming, and why it has very little to do these days for me with who actually publishes a game. But the trick would be to award XP only in relation to hope. So when players do something that keeps hope alive, they get XP. So not for killing monsters, not for killing treasure. It's not that kind of game. It's a game about keeping hope alive. The easiest way to motivate the players in that direction and to make the game all about keeping hope alive is to give XP for doing that. So that's the first thought. The second thought is, if I was going to do a system based on this idea of you know, your character sheet really being the hope rather than particular characters, I think it would want to be a dice pool system. And one inspiration I might take might be the pool system for Ron Edwards' Sorcerer. There's a pin in there for talking about Ron Edwards at some later stage. I don't hear much discussion of Ron Edwards on Anchor. But he's got a D10, actually says you can use any die size, but he likes D10 in Sorcerer. D10 system, every roll is an opposed roll. And you build your pool, you want to roll as many D10s as you like, and then you are just comparing the highest result rolled. And if you've got multiples of those, then you can count how many of the highest result was rolled. And where you've got, where you both roll the same highest number, then obviously you can cancel out the ones that are equivalent and move down to the next highest roll. And the advantage of something like that would be, you know, all your rolls would be the hope pool against the fear pool. And the nice thing would be, even when hope is down to just one little die, there is, of course, the chance that hope will still win, even against a massive fear pool. You know, if the hope die comes up 10 and the fear pool gets no 10s, then hope wins in that particular situation. So I like that. I like the idea of the flame of hope being able to dwindle down to just one die, but still potentially overcoming when the odds are stacked against it. There we go. That's enough from me today, I think. So I'm going to say thanks again to Jason of Nerds RPG Variety Cast and to Joe from Hindsightless or Wheel or Woe for the call-ins. Really keep the call-ins coming. I really appreciate getting those. Thanks again to Stephen Dowling. Stephen, incidentally, was assisted by a whole bunch of other people, and I'm sorry I can't name them. But Tales from Dream Inspires went really well, and if you have a chance to get to Tales from Screaming Spires, I highly, highly recommend that. Cheers, Stephen, and cheers to Goblin's Henchmen, because I had a really great time running a game using your hex flower from Carapace, and I will catch you all soon.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to contact Dave, please leave a message on Anchor, email dpercentile@gmail.com, or find him on Twitter @d_percentile.